So can we say that this is a metaphor of reality?
We could say that. It's a metaphor of a metaphor. Well, I mean, it's curious to just kind of be to be delightfully baffled by the presence of experiencing itself. You know, without having an idea, then it's easier, we could argue, to see or perceive the novelty of the moment. And we lose the joy of the novelty of the moment through association with let's just call it lazy perception, right? We become habituated to the novelty of the moment by reducing it to placing ourselves in a familiar place as a familiar self, bored silly with the presumption of control. We crave control, not realizing that we're actually bored silly with it. Thinking that, oh no, more control will help with the boredom or the routine of my own consciousness, when it's the opposite. It's less control actually refreshes the novelty. But we don't get that, so we pursue more control, more familiarity, rather than less. And then the novelty of the present moment, which is what we could say is truly nourishing, evades us completely.
We
You know, then we go to Bombay.
sure. We are, I would say, we are habitually juxtaposed.
Yeah, nice way to put it. That's right. Habitually juxtaposed. That's right. Yeah. We do so much convincing internally as a habit, convincing ourselves of, you know, how the day is going, where we are, when we are, what we are, why we are, what we have to do next, the priorities, you know, the things that are ahead in the day that are going to make us you know, happier, attract our attention. And all of that is fantasy, right? It's That doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's of the nature of fantasy. It's not presently attenuated. It's right rumination of events that are not so. The imposition of events or frames of reference that are just not so. And that's what makes us, you know, bored and boring. And that's cool too. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being bored or boring. You have to, one follows the scent of their own interest, right? I mean, how many people participate in a conversation like this one that makes absolutely no sense? Not that many, because they're following the scent of their own, right? Their own interest. And this is a, you know, these kind of introspective evaluation of the warp and woof of consciousness is a little curious. It's not common. You don't ever see it on TV, right? You don't have any role models in the material consumerist culture for the thrill of looking at the nature of present experience. Because all of the entertainment mediums, including, you know, including big name, teachers and presenters like Deepak Chopra and others, are purveyors of knowledge, purveyors of imaginary wisdom, purveyors of reasons and consequences, right? Expectations, shoulds and should nots, to-dos. And it's banal. So it's very interesting to be inspired some curious way to look at the nature of consciousness itself as the best thrill ride you could imagine. That's weird. And then find, venues, teachers, teachings, opportunities to actually ride that coaster. Even on the interview shows, the Enlightenment interview shows, and there are many of those, very seldom do the speaker and the interviewer ride the coaster of presently attenuated inquiry, presently attenuated thrill. Usually it's anecdotal. I got enlightened when, my guru threw me out because I had a vision. I'm special, not like you. You're ordinary. I'm special. And you're like, S it's so ho-hum. Because the real cutting edge of, the beauty of your own mind, of your own bodhicitta, is the revelation of present experience, not a story, right? Not a fantastic, because any fantastic spiritual event pales in comparison to this moment, this one. No spiritual event can compete with right now. But when we listen to the common, ways that enlightened people are interviewed, let's say, or the way books are written, we're led to believe that the event was what was valuable, right? Someone's event, that's what was valuable. But it's like, no, because no event is better than this moment. That would be like beyond idiotic. It's a different, I don't know, it's a different kind of training, right? If this is a training process, an attenuation process, then the training is, oh, well, here's what's real right now, and nothing prior to this moment could compete with it. Nothing after this so-called moment is worth even thinking about, worth even considering, though it doesn't mean you can't plan a trip to Michigan and have a great time. If there's a discovery to be made, it's not anything that happened to Nirsagadatta. Who gives a shit? The discovery is how your present experience is landing in your present experience. Whether that's mystical, novel, right? Beyond comprehension, or whether we've gotten so accustomed to ourselves in space-time that we are solemnly bored.
Well, I have no idea what it felt like to be in Nisargadatta's presence, but when I look at pictures of him sitting in that room, it's there's no way I find any appeal wanting to be in that room.
Well, sure, yeah. That's right. You have to be
Must have
like,
smelled like biddies all the time.
yeah, beaties and incense, absolutely.
Speaking of the present moment, there's quite a delay between your voice and your video.
Well, I do that deliberately. I move around, but then I speak a few minutes later.
You're doing that just to confuse us, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. I'm a ventriloquist. Pretend I'm saying one thing, but I'm really saying another, so it looks like a delay.
Oh, now it's good. That's funny how you finally caught up with the audio.
I got up with myself. I just put my sneakers on, maybe that's why. It's a lot of fun to not want anything from present experience. You know, when we're not paying attention, we're sometimes befuddled by wanting, by becoming, driven to metaphor and explanation. And that's how, you know, what we could call the sense of continuity of self gets fed. Why? Wanting, becoming, comparing, placing oneself in space-time, justifying experience. You know, all of this fountain, right, this ongoing fountain, it contributes to a sense of self as a continuity, right? And it's really fun to play around with present experience without wanting, without becoming, without consideration of the past, without making plans, without having any explanation or being seduced into, you know, an anecdotal memory or some kind of, ooh, look at me, right? Which is typically how we communicate, right? I mean, even in a business meeting, ooh, look at me. I mean, I'm surprised that we don't throw poop at each other across the room, you Maybe we have matured as a species. I don't know. Or maybe we'd be better off if we did throw poop. It might be more authentic. So in all of this, let's call it, you know, the habit of mind, right? The habit of behavioral systems, the habit of assertion. When these can just, you know, let's say acquiesce, right? Quiet down, or one without any effort simply becomes disinterested in the texture, right? The habit of ooh, look at me. No becoming, no context, right? One is not interested in orienting or even in deliberately, you know, seeking disorientation, right? It's delightful that, you know, present being is so, and to our great good fortune, it's not about us. Present being is not about us. Though, you know, we are, you could say, both source and conduit of feeling it. Right? Feeling is supreme. Feeling is autonomous, sovereign. But it doesn't mean it's feeling a thing or about a thing, right? It's not I'm having a feeling. It's not a sentimental observation or relationship. Resting in being with no destination. It's a movement of intelligence, not knowledge. It's a movement of intelligence, of intimate reciprocity. And this intimate reciprocity, which is simply present of its own accord, is the window into oneself. And even amidst the you know, the dramas and busyness, right, of a day, of appointments and work and managing children and bosses and transportation, dry cleaning, right. This curious intimacy is always present.
Present even without recognition?
It's a great question. Yeah, it's a really great question. So let's say, it's really great. What would we call recognition, and how might we refer to the absence of recognition, right? So it's like, oh, I'm consciously, right? Consciously suggests being here now, right? Present, with, cognizant of, right? Recognition of the presence of intimacy. So, which is a wonderful feeling, there's no question about it, you know. Sit on a cushion or do whatever, you know, just for the thrill of recognition. But even that quality of recognition is so curious, because it suggests two, right? You on the receiving end of the admittedly delightful presence of recognition. Yeah. And so if you're, you know, if you've lost your dry cleaning ticket and then you bump into someone on the street and your briefcase flies open and, you know, you tear your, you know, brand new wool trousers and, you know, before you know it, within 30 seconds, you've turned into an absolute unabashed, embarrassed mess. You know, like doing a pratfall through life. It's like you're doing it takes 30 seconds to turn you into an absolute mess. Right, your whole life turns upside down just because you couldn't find a dry cleaning ticket. So one might say, well, that really, really, really sucked. There was no recognition, right? During while I was falling in an involuntary pratfall through space, as reality was messing with my head, and I was undefended. But you know, even then. Isn't there a certain confidence placed in, what would you say, the revelation of present experience? I mean, do you or I or anyone need to be present as a recognizing agency for revelation to be so? Yeah. It's fun to look at because, As we apply our so-called consciousness to the textures at hand, we can't help but to feel a certain kind of occupy movement, right? Like I am occupying my present experience. I am attentive and attenuated to the nuance and subtlety at hand. And so I am in recognition, right? I am in conscious appreciation of the texture of my experience. My suggestion would be that, how you or I or anyone is in recognition of the miraculous texture of being is not through agency. And that's a little, that's, well, maybe a lot strange.
Important message from Stuyvesant High School regarding your child's final exam schedule. The Algebra 2 Trigonometry final.
Oh, thank goodness. Are we all signed up for Algebra 2? I missed mine. I'm going to drive to New York City tonight so I can take Algebra 2 exam with Jay. You imagine how screwed we would have been if the high school would have called our parents every time we were smoking pot in the parking lot and going out to, like, Vietnam rallies? Mr. and Mrs., your son has been caught smoking doobies in the parking lot and hitching a ride to such and such a place to participate once again in an anti-Vietnam rally. I would have been busted. Let's say there's no here, here. There's no there, there. There's no agency that is imbued with the marvelous skill set of recognition. So your so-called enjoyment of the present moment, as if there were a present moment, is not dependent upon the degree of attention that you give to it. You could say that's the flaw of mindfulness practice. Mindfulness practice encourages and foments someone who's sitting on the cushion attenuating to present experience in a so-called mindful manner. And that shit has... First of all, it's fake. It's contrived. It's always been contrived, and it has nothing to do with let's just call it liberation. Mindfulness is not a bridge to liberation. Let's put it that way. Thich Nhat Hanh, mistaken. Joseph Goldstein, mistaken. Jon Kabat-Zinn, mistaken. Mindfulness is not a bridge. It's not a vehicle for liberation. It's a contrivance. It has legs, it has its effect. But to attempt to use mindfulness as a bridge, as a means, is a mistake, or let's just say has no genuine utility. But maybe you have to use it for 40 years to find out, oh God, that didn't get me anywhere, And so then you could say, well, yeah, it had utility. I practiced mindfulness for the greater part of my life and went on a ton of retreats. And now I realize that that really had nothing at all to do with reality.
So as an example, when you when you point out mindfulness, you mean something to the extent of we're sitting quietly watching our thoughts and being detached from them.
Well, detached, you know, detached suggests agency, right? Detached, once right. again, suggests a Steve or a Jeff or a whomever, right? As an interloper in the midst of present experience. I mean, you and I are unnecessary anthropomorphizations of nothing at all. And so why, you know, impose mindfulness on a very unruly, mischievous consciousness? In hopes that, you know, we can reel ourselves in. And by reeling ourselves in, get a better leg up. Right? Improve our chances of liberation by reeling ourselves in behaviorally and psychiatrically and mindfully. Which is total horseshit.
Right, but what I'm asking is... that to me seems to be what the goal of mindfulness is.
Yeah, the goal of my...
Yeah. Whether it is or isn't the path to liberation, that mm-hmm. seems to be what they're advertising.
Yeah, I don't know. They might be, you know, they might be advertising the mindfulness, you know, like give the camera away to sell the film, right? They might be advertising mindfulness so that you'll buy more Buddhist accoutrements or their books, right? Or participate in their correspondence courses. You know what I mean? It's like, what does mindfulness have to do with, you know, the Buddha's liberation under the Bodhi tree? How about nothing? Like, totally zippity-doo-dah. And so... Who came up with this absurd, you know, Asian-oriented emphasis on mindfulness? Maybe the Asians Ooh. Did, because, you know, they have their own cultural boondoggles to deal with. It's like we buy Buddhism and we think that what we're being sold or what we're being told is what the Buddha would have us do, what the Buddha instructed us to do, so that we could be more like him. He didn't care. You know, so much emphasis is placed on the, what would you call it, the compassionate intentions of the Buddha. And so mindfulness was sold so that we could get out of suffering. I mean, the whole thing is a ruse. Look how much investment, you know, people place in the teachings of so-and-so, you know, in the book written by so-and-so or the enlightenment experience of so-and-so. And all of a sudden, we have some kind of, yeah, we have some kind of expert, you know. Everyone's bowing to each other saying, you know, namaste. Or what do you want with your toast? I thought that's what it means, right? How do you want your coffee and what do you want on your toast? Namaste. It's like what's true and exactly who is in charge of what's true. Is the Buddha in charge of what's true? Jack Kornfield, is he in charge of what's true? We're in deep shit if Jack's in charge of what's true. You know? We are really fucked. Christopher Titmus, you know, is he in charge of what's true? How about Wayne Lickerman? Does he know what's true? Can he sit there on his tucket and opine about, you know, what's real and what's not real? He does, but he can't. Well, you know, maybe Peter Fenner knows what's true, you know, or Peter Brown, maybe he knows what's true. We'll have to call him. Hey, Pete, do you know what's true? I don't think he'd say yes. But if it were to help you, he probably would say yes. You know, not that it was true, but just by saying it, if it would help you, he would say, of course, yes. But he'd be lying. Did Ramana Maharshi know what was true? Guy walked around in a diaper and pet peacocks. I'm going to count on him. Sat in a cave. Great. You know, Brahman. He was Brahman. So is Papa John. Papa John is Brahman. And he eats pizza with a fork.
Papa John Creech?
Papa John Creech. He was Brahman. That's right. Definitely.
I love how we digress here.
Well, some might call it digress. We call it penetrating reality.
I don't know which is the best part.
Yeah, really. Me neither.
I'm still waiting for Francine to sing songs from Rent.
Yeah, that would be nice. Sing us a song from Rent.
I can't remember the words to that AIDS one.
Oh, yeah. You mean the one that killed everyone?
Yeah.
Who's the guy who sings that song? Must have been the right place, but must have been the wrong time.
Dr. John, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a great song.
I was in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. Everything is liquid. If we and as we, you know, relax, not even voluntarily or doesn't matter, but as we just, I don't know, we just say, maybe you could say withdraw. Relax could be expressed as withdrawing from James Brown. Funky Sangha. There it is. Funky Sangha. Thank God you can't get enlightened this way. What were we saying? Oh, yeah. Relaxing is just it's a metaphor for withdrawing intentional outcome from the presence of experience. You see, there's no, you relax or withdraw from the intentionality of pattern recognition. Right? Because pattern recognition, which happens faster than fast and miraculously, suggests duality, suggests a world outside of yourself. That's what pattern recognition, you know, does. And it operates truly, you know, like by magic. So this withdrawing of the senses, you know, which you can see emphasized, let's say, in Patanjali teachings, you know, or Vipassana teachings. One is withdrawing from the seduction of pattern recognition. Because the creation of a world is tantamount with the creation of a self in that world. So pattern recognition, which is, you know, not egoic, not voluntary, renders or suggests a world other than yourself that you're occupying. So this, you could say, strategy of relaxation or mindfulness or meditation is, I don't know, maybe you could call it a conscious withdrawal from pattern recognition. Which is fantastic. Because our, you know, our eyes and our ears, you know, less all our olfactory sense is powerful too. You know, touch is powerful when you're in, you know, textural contact with things. But the reflex of pattern recognition creates a world, an imaginary world, in which one finds oneself as an occupant of an imaginary world. And that's, you know, what? Duality. That's the bane of duality, the risk of duality. So the withdrawal from pattern recognition, not willfully, right, just kind of a real chill, right, permits us to experience present experience in its liquid nature. Right? The first-hand intimate observation of the liquefying nature of present experience. That can occur, that revelation can occur to you as one withdraws or relaxes from pattern recognition, from the intent or imposition of pattern recognition. And somehow, strangely, we become comfortable in I don't know what to call it. Dwelling in or dwelling as your own experience without being pushed around or seduced by pattern recognition. And without that pattern recognition running the show, running the mental show, then you're no longer an occupant of present experience. So the myth of duality is, you could say, broken. Hey, Ryan.
Hey. What's going on?
How's it going? Things are good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm just lost track of time. I'm glad I made it on the call, though.
Glad you could make it. What's the snow situation in Chalfont?
Oh, there's nothing. Storm the century, you know.
Yeah. What spiritual discoveries did you make this week? Not a one? Fantastic.
not anything really worth mentioning, but, you know.
Yeah, keep it that way.
Yeah. No, I just become more in touch with my, I don't know, neurotic need for enlightenment, I guess I could say.
Sweet. That's great. Yeah. Well, if somebody's going to suffer a neurotic need, it may as well be the neurotic need for enlightenment.
I mean, yeah, I've agreed with that for a long time, but even that's like starting to get unfulfilling or old. I don't know how to call it.
Yeah, sure. That's right. You know, the neurotic need for enlightenment, right, is it's like we're signing up to be on a boat ride that never gets anywhere.
Yeah.
It's like we artificially depart from ourselves to convince ourselves that it's worthwhile to be in neurotic pursuit of enlightenment.
Well, and you know, it seems like I didn't really have, you know, didn't make a conscious choice in this. I guess that all started happening afterwards.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, there's no... I don't think there's such a thing as conscious choice at all, ever.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
Anyone.
You know, that... The pattern of that seemed to happen after, I don't know, all the confusion or however you want to term it.
Yeah. Yeah, so the discovery, you know, it's like you have to, what would you say, kind of like turn. Because the pursuit of enlightenment is a, you know, a walking forth, right? In a sense, I mean, this is just metaphor, right? In a sense, I'm walking forth, meaning I'm walking away from my present condition to go in hot pursuit of a better condition, right? A different condition, perhaps an improved condition.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then, you know, if I get settled for a minute, then you hear, you know, one of those famed tales of awakening, and you're like, well, something seems to be happening experience-wise for some people, you know, so why is that not happening here? And then it just turns into a whole huge mess again real quick. But
well, yeah, I hear you, sure. I mean, sometimes our own, you know, curious persona is just written that way, right? The script is written that way, and what choice do we have but to follow it?
Yeah, definitely like one of my largest personality traits is like seeker, you know.
Uh-huh.
Bred in me at a critical time of my young adult life some years ago, and now, you know, I use it in many different situations. You know, I got some problem, I go on and research all these other people who have dealt with it and find someone who's able to work through it and, you know, seek myself an answer. But
yeah,
enlightenment, well, just doesn't seem to be an answer, really. So at least not one I found.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's great to be an intrepid researcher, right? And use the resources at your disposal to investigate a problem, right? Give yourself over to the experience of a problem or a challenge or a puzzle, and play around with, you know, resolution, with remedies. I mean, it's totally fun, right? I mean, you can do it with nutrition, right? You can do it with vitamin therapy. You can do it with exercise. You can do it with, you know, meditation and therapy, swimming with dolphins, right? You can do it at the casino, at the opium den, right? you can do it. You can apply yourself to the curious discovery and trial and error of solutions, right? And it's a blast.
It works well elsewhere. Like, it really really does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it does. Right. Well, when it comes to the, you know, the kind of curious paradox of the nature of being, right, any endeavoring creates a bardo, creates a realm. So the endeavoring suggests a realm or a volume in which you are occupying it as a, right, problem solver. And that's just artificial. That's why when it comes to, you know, something as curious as realization, were there such a thing, that we can't apply the problem-solving skills that we may have used successfully elsewhere. You have to kind of be cleverer than yourself.
Yeah, being regular clever.
Yeah, if you're being regular clever, then you know, you'll enjoy the fruits of regular clever. Yeah. So, you know, let's say here's the present moment. I mean, I have it on good advice. This is the present moment. What the fuck do I know, right?
It appears that way.
And and are you, or you know, any of us on the call, you know, making something of it, right? Is the present moment about something? Is it actually a frame or a context for your so-called life? To the extent that we convince ourselves that the present moment is about something, which happens to be me and my life, then, you know, that chronic irritability of the insufficiency of separation becomes, you know, a nagging presence. And that's fantastic that it does. Because without it, right, one would busy oneself in life with, let's say, no curiosity, no interest, no affection. So it's great to suffer the disappointment of being oneself and therefore inspired to seek or problem solve, right? The Gordian knot of consciousness. Then let's say you develop a different set of observational skills when it comes to the texture of present experiencing. And I would say the most radical of those skills is that you don't make this about anything. I mean, really nothing at all. That experiencing is so, is irrefutable, but it's about what exactly? And you can see that when it's not about anything, you can't convince yourself of being the sufferer of some kind of affliction. But once you make it about something, which suggests you, right, as a protagonist or antagonist, appearing in a space-time volume of behavioral choices, experiential choices, then the present moment becomes, you could say, virtually unsatisfying. Right? We're playing around with the genesis of samsara appearing vibrantly, vitally so, in your present experience.
It just seems to be, you know, really second nature to have it be claimed as my experience, you know.
Okay, call it second nature. Fine, call it first nature. Call it nth nature, right?
Well, yeah. I mean,
yes, of course. But or and, right? We're conjuring now, right? We're having a little shaman's fire pit circle. We're conjuring. We're playing around with the curious nature of present experience. Present attentivity, present attenuation. To look and see if this is about something. Vitally so. Is this about anything? Does it really conjure a world?
Yeah, I mean, who could say fundamentally one way or another?
Well, you can. I'm not, don't beg this off. Get into it.
Yeah, no, I'm not. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I come to a question like that and it's like, what's there, you know, I'll use this word again, fundamentally, like, I don't know, unfathomable?
That's a good one.
It's, you know, your mind just sort of, like, breaks almost. It's just like, no.
That's right. Yes. What we call mind, or the continuity of a sense of self, the confidence we place in self, you could say lapses, you know. Breaks is good too, but, you know, it lapses. Because when you really give your attention, right, the miracle of you, you give the miracle of you back to you, as in pretty much right here, right now. And therefore, belief lapses. That's the window. And there's no further pursuit. There's no further justification. It's like we're becoming, you could say, we're playing with, right? A familiarity with the presence of an actual palpable lapse in the presumption of self in a volume, right? Self in space-time. It's weird. It's profound. It's observable. It's palpable. It's so. It's just not, you could say it's just not common, right, in the typical ways that primates relate to each other. Wouldn't it be amazing, as in right about now is good, to become acquainted with lapse as nourishment?
Yeah, it's a nice silence.
Okay. And you know, silence, you know, whether it means the presence or absence of sound, right, is not nearly as poignant, right, as the inner lapse that reveals itself to you.
That's right? What I meant, like mental.
Yeah. Yes, right. Well, could we say silence of identification, right? Lapse of identification.
Yeah.
That's it. It's that simple. I would say, the recognition, conscious, right? We're using the word conscious or recognition, that there's a lapse of identification present in your experience is, you know, kind of a kick-ass revelation. So let's say the simple affection that we have for a lapse of identification sneaks up on us. You could say it grows on us. We find ourselves without any particular effort, occupying, resorting to, relaxing in, withdrawing into the lapse, which is not a zero, right? It's not the antithesis of something. It's its own reality, right? Lapse is not just the opposite of a thing. Lapse is its own reality. The texture of experiencing doesn't cease, doesn't go into void. The biologic, right, undulation is present. The sensitivity of texture and experiencing is present. Nuance is present. But we're not turning the present moment into something, not making it about something. Therefore, we're not reifying or reifying, depending on how you want to use the word, or creating a sense of self in the midst of present experience. Therefore, lapse is truly its own reality. It's not just the absence of something.
Could we say an attenuation?
That's right, because experiencing is strange. I mean, you know, whenever you talk about experiencing, it's kind of impossible to suggest that experiencing is a, right, it's a non-dual inclusive unicity, right? Experiencing is always kind of thought of as I am experiencing, right? I'm enjoying lapse. Or I'm suffering from, you know, neurotic disappointment. But experiencing is we get, let's say, accustomed to the reality and presence of lapse can reveal itself to itself as, you know, non-dual, as just, you know, inclusivity. And that inclusivity, the recognition, the felt sense of this inclusivity, which is the lapse of identification, is the homecoming. That's it. And, you know, so what if I become an idiot an hour from now, or a minute from now, or 5 minutes from now, and get wrapped up into a bunch of horseshit that sucks me into a drama field that takes me a decade to get out of? Oops. Shoots and ladders, baby. You see, if I don't aim for any kind of permanence, right? If I don't aim for any durability in my present experience, it's much easier. I'll go out on a limb. It's much easier just to relax back into lapse. But the moment I become insistent about some kind of durability, then I fall out of lapse, right? I've reoccupied or re-signed up to the present moment as a creature in space-time. That's why it's a fun experiment to place no demand on present experience. This is already liberated beyond our wildest dreams. And it reveals itself to us, we reveal ourselves to ourselves, through the window of lapse, the withdrawal from association or identification with pattern recognition. And it truly is its own world. It has its own, you could say, rules and nuances, right? Its own guardians, its own archetypal animus. And it's always been right here in the midst of what I thought was my, you know, ridiculous and frustrated life. This whole profound universe of texture and discovery is right, has always been exactly right here. I just never noticed it because no one, you could say, assisted me very successfully with the recognition of lapse. But lapse is the great killer. Thankfully so. Because lapse kills Buddhism. It kills Hinduism. It kills Thich Nhat Hanh. It kills Nirsagadatta. It kills Adyashanti. Kills everyone. Kills everything. Because there's no authority in lapse. There's no knowledge in lapse. There's no accomplishment in lapse. You see? There's no demand. And that's the freedom. But again, it's not freedom from a thing, you know? If I'm a suffering muggle and I get a moment's rest, then I think, oh, I have some freedom from myself as a suffering muggle. But that's not even that important. Perhaps not important at all. Because lapse is alive, like the Frankenstein monster. It is alive! Yeah. So rather than, you know, wandering or trying to hunt down enlightenment as a remedy for the suffering muggle, we actually enter into the realm, the invitation of lapse itself as its own reality, not as a remedy for suffering. And so we don't pine to hope that it will stay with us, right? Because if I pine that lapse stays with me, what am I doing? Well, I'm reflecting upon present experience through the lens of the suffering muggle that is praying for, call it enlightenment, to occur and to remain so. But how is enlightenment going to occur or remain so if I am so insistent on looking through the lens of the suffering muggle?
Yeah, it's a death trap.
It's a death trap. Yeah, that's right.
It's a suicide rap.
I was in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. Yeah, this is really funny. See, rather than extrovert or go in search of, we simply drop into a concomitant, call it parallel universe of absolute nuance, absolute subtlety, complete withdrawal from what pattern recognition is suggesting as a world outside ourselves. Yeah, then you are indeed sovereign. No one knows anything because there's nothing to know. No one has anything to teach you because there's nothing to teach. No one has any advice to give you because they can all go fuck themselves. You don't have to make sense of anything. You don't have to orient. You don't have to, you know, work out your emotional heresy. Good luck with that anyway.
Thank you.
It's not like reality is over the next crest. Reality is a suppository. Operators are standing by. Some telethon this turned out to be. We're going to go broke and everyone with MS is going to fucking die.
Oh, I had a lot of questions like a couple weeks ago, but I just... Oh, there's not much there anymore.
That's right. Wherever you are, there's not much there anymore. I wish I could stop laughing, but I can't. I really want to stop laughing. Really, I do, but I can't. Gee, I wish I had some knowledge. About anything. I sure wish I had a spiritual experience, then I could say something. My proctologist turned out to be from Andromeda. Who knew? Ba-dum-bum.
Where's Fred?
I just woke up because I heard the word proctologist.
You
Wait,
mean
what
as
are you
in
talking about?
As in enlightened? Yeah.
Alien proctologist? Mm-hmm. I'm up.
That's how the Night Sky Sangha rolls. Alien proctologist. It's like Samurai Taylor. Oh, God. What are we going to do with ourselves?
Are we scaring people now? Should...
I don't know. G- God, I hope I get spiritual.
It's about as likely as me not being crazy. Not gonna happen.
Good point. Never gonna happen.
So I'll just enjoy myself as crazy.
That's right. That's right.
This is the part where you should say for your recording. You could skip over the next 20 minutes.
Yeah. If you've been listening to this, you can skip over the next 20 minutes.
Just say nothing to do with anything. The end.
What are they talking about? God, I mean, aren't they interested in anything?
See, this is why you need commercials.
Yeah. We're going to take a commercial break. We'll be right back.
We should have musical interludes.
Maybe. I know.
We did the other night, but...
I'm trying to set it up.
Jazz refreshment.
We did have a musical interlude, huh?
I'm trying to set it up.
A little jazz everything. Refreshment. Yeah. Well, you know, a snowy Tuesday, the air, the water barometric pressure is low. Everyone's kind of napping.
Wait, I can't hear anything. It's back to the same song.
That's going to be it's going to be the new intro and outro to the Night Sky Saga Tuesday night video call. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Night Sky Saga. I must have been the right place, but it must have been the wrong time.
There you go. And you could say, is that a common theme in your life? We have a remedy.
Yeah.
Help.
Play a little Leon Russell. You know, experiencing is the shit. I mean, we're drunk with experiencing. We're so awake. We're so realized, whatever that means, that we're just completely enthralled by the presence of experiencing. I mean, we really dig it. We misunderstand it. You know, an anthropomorphization occurs that makes it appear as if there's, a world and a creature occupying that world. And so experiencing can become, you know, terrifying or full of apprehension or disappointment, insecurity. Hurt feelings, you know, wounding. Abandonment and enmeshment and everything else in between, right? But still, it's like, come on, this rocks. And I think we forget that no matter how shitty our life is going, there's something kind of curiously, weirdly delightful about, right? I don't know, breathing, being biologic, right? Being a mosh pit of profound texture. And there's no limit to the, you know, windows of subtlety and revelation that are undulatingly, radiantly expressing from, call it moment to moment, even though there are no moments.
We're just battery juice.
Yeah.
I lost my sound again.
I think that, you know, as the journey matures, as we, you know, settle down from dramatic overlays and dramatic interludes, then this profound richness of withdrawing from gross pattern recognition and the observation of the mutagenic nature of consciousness and pattern recognition from moment to moment, which is beyond, totally beyond description, you know, or human language. As that comes into view, I mean, we're nourished in a way that we had never imagined possible. Really, it leaves enlightenment in the dust. Fuck enlightenment. Let Adyashanti sell enlightenment and others of his ilk. What this actually is so way cooler and weirder than anything that could possibly happen to a primate. It's off the charts. And that is the adventure worth taking. Not all of this crap that's sold in these correspondence courses as, you know, idealized or peak experience. Peering into the nature of nuanced infinity, completely released from the idolatry of self, the idolatry of body, the idolatry of space and time, is off the charts. One's emotional flares or flare-ups mean nothing. So our orientation, if you will, to our own transcendent presence, has nothing to do with the myth of human at all. And the ingress or the window into this curious gift of observation is right here. It's right this. It's right now. It's all that this is. No one has authority. No one has any better experience than you. Nobody's cathartic story or spiritual experience means doodly-dwock, dung. Fuck 'em. You are the sovereign Brahmanic enterprise, the sole and sovereign Brahmanic enterprise of transhuman fractal expression. You could say our job, you know, our mission impossible is to convert the myth of seeking into the presence of actualization. Which has nothing to do with the great body of metaphor of all the enlightened masters. They can all just fuck off. Because they're not doing you any favor by making it appear as if they've accomplished anything. How could you have a mystical experience better than this one? Why would you even try? Why would you pine for a mystical experience better than this one? Only delusionally.
You gotta admit, though, a mystical experience is not a bad consolation prize, though.
Well, sure, if they come, one doesn't kick a gift horse in the mouth, right? Yeah. It's like discovering that your present nature is that of the void, not by means of disappearance, but that it you beautifully don't amount to anything. When you get the sense that your present experience doesn't amount to anything, then you could say you pierce the veil of the myth of becoming. And that discovery is, just for fun, I would argue, way better than a demonstrative or cathartic mystical experience. You see, what happens is the confidence in your own present consciousness relaxes. So much so that you're not even interested in a mystical experience occurring, as it would be a buzzkill. I know maybe it's a weird flip. But holding out, or even being on the receiving end of a mystical experience, turns out to be a buzzkill.
Okay.
Fred knows this.
Barely. Got his attention.
I'm back.
He's calling me out. He's like, she's a buzzkill. Total buzzkill.
Really?
Right here.
Really? If you're not paying attention to me, it's a buzzkill. Hi, Fred. Hi, Freddy boy. Okay. Sorry, Ryan, you might not see it, but Francine has a lovely Pit bullish creature.
Meat puppet.
Pit bullish creature.
Sit, that Fred. Sit.
Pays us a visit. Keeps us sober.
I see part of him there.
Yeah.
Flatted your roll.
Well, it's been a lovely, lovely Tuesday night. I think we put several people straight to bed. And that's a gift.
It's definitely a gift.
Yeah. Thanks for taking time out of your busy life to join me on the Night Sky Sangha. Call to Oblivion.
Where's our song?
It must have been the right place. Yeah, let's do the outro.
Okay.
Yeah, baby. Night Sky Sangha. Coming to you from Oakland, California.
I feel like I'm in Mr. T or something.
Ow!
I've been in the right thing.
Whoop ass. Here comes the fade out. Woohoo! Brian, thanks for joining us. We'll see you around real soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Come to a live meeting if you feel like it.
Yeah, I was planning to this week, but I had to work like every night and then Sunday morning too, so.
Yeah. Gotta work, you gotta work.
Yeah.
I hear you. All right, folks. Thanks a lot. We'll see you real soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.